Chase McKay, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Big Joe Dubin alongside Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier with us on the ones and twos. The Chase and Big Joe show we announced earlier today. Appreciate Mike Organ from the Tennessean for putting it out as well. Big Joe returning home to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
You can't come home again.
You can. That's what they say. And he will join me, and it'll be the Chase and Big Joe show. 9 to 11 weekdays starting on Tuesday. We'll take Labor Day off. Robbie and Joe going to be cool and come in here and do 9 to noon. Talk Vols as they'll open their season. And then we'll play some baseball for you as well. Really looking forward to having you back. Because as I mentioned when we started the show, that I interned with you. That's how I walked into this building. So Jeremy Benefield, who was the assistant program director at the time, interviews me for an internship, and I was scared to death, scared of my own shadow. I was at MTSU. I didn't know right from left. Didn't know hardly anything about this business. I just knew I wanted to be in it. And that was the first time I heard the joke of, well, we're going to talk you out of it.
Yeah.
But I came up here and did the interview with Jeremy, and you guys were – like, it was the first week of the sports revolution.
Wow.
Of you and Willie. So Willie had come over from across the street, was going to do the afternoon show with you.
Yep.
The radio station had been The Game for 3 months at that point.
November of 2011,
and we just hit 12 years a few days ago as a radio station. And I walk in here, and the late Dave Hull, the incredible Hull, who yep. had been on The Buzz, he was producing as well, was a producer, and Hull had this real deep, gargly voice, like, hey, man, how you doing?
Yeah,
you
know? Right.
And so I, like, walk in, and I see him and meet him, and then Jeremy and I sat in the studio, did the interview, and he's like, okay, well, you start Monday. I'm like, okay, cool. And I walk in, and I had been a huge fan of yours from your days at Channel 2 and watching Big Joe on the Go, those segments and stuff. So I was like, oh, we're going to work with Joe Dubin. This is going to be cool. And Willie, and I've known Willie. And I walk in, and I'm like, hey, Mr. Dubin, I'm Chase McCabe. And you just kind of smile, and you look at Hull and go, well, he is cute. And I didn't know what I was in for after that moment. But
and here you stay.
And here we are.
A lot of credit. Congratulations to you, man, for sticking around and getting it done. And stations never sound as good and as powerful as it is right now. So that's a lot of credit to you.
You taught me, and I mean others, like I'll give – I kind of like when I talk about my mentors in this business, I have several. And you're obviously one of them, and Darren and Willie and Jeremy – George, Greg Pogue, like I've been blessed to work with some really great people and learn from some great people. And you all have taught me one thing in one way or another of this business will humble you. It will harden your skin.
Yep.
There were people that didn't believe in me that are no longer here and proved you wrong. But, you know, you kind of grow through those
sure.
trials and tribulations. And I mean, you were one of the first to teach me that because, you know, it took you how long to get on the air at Channel 2?
Oh, gosh, 6 years?
Yeah.
Yep. And so I tell people, you know, if you quit, it guarantees one thing, that you're not going to accomplish your goal. That's
right.
That simple. If you quit, you're not going to accomplish your goal. That's the one thing.
And in a phrase that Jeremy said to me one time that I have taken to heart was, prove yourself right. You know, don't worry about proving anybody wrong. Prove yourself right.
Yeah.
And that's what we have both done. So Chase and Big Joe show is something that we had been talking about for a while. And you called me after you were announced as the color analyst for MTSU. You'll make your debut tomorrow, 5:30, 93.3 Classic Hits in Tuscaloosa as MTSU plays who, Joe?
Oh, Bummer.
Yes, that is correct. But you called me, you're like, hey, let's make this happen. Let's do this. And we had always spitballed it and talked about it. And
just got to be happy and fun where your feet are planted, man. And just have fun with that and find your calling and go be happy. It's not, trust me, it ain't about the money.
No.
Trust me, it ain't about the money. Money's nice. But my goodness, being happy and doing what you want to do and your calling is better.
How excited are you to be with MTSU tomorrow.
I am fired up. We're leaving Chip and I and head down this afternoon about 1 o'clock and to see MTSU take on Alabama. What a great start to the season down there. A lot of unknowns for Alabama. No, you don't know who the quarterback's going to be. And I was watching these YouTube podcasts last couple nights, and the people in Alabama, because Alabama plays Texas next week, and it's all they're talking about is Texas. That's all they're talking about. And this one podcast guy goes, oh, yeah, forget we got a game this week once we beat Middle Tennessee and blah, 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 and go on that way, which is fine. Think that's great.
Sure.
But just, you know, why not go down there and shock the world? Can you imagine that? I mean, you got to believe it first to accomplish it.
And in talking to Stock on Wednesday, I feel like they believe it. Yeah. You know, because there's a lot of I am one of those that I walked out of SEC Media Days going, Alabama could be interesting. Saban's got a little bit of that swagger back. You should be nervous when he has that. But it's also the first game, and who do they play next week? Texas.
Yeah.
So they're, like you just said, so they're, I think there could be a little bit of overlooking.
Absolutely it is. And even Saban was talking about Texas next week. You know, I know the message is clear about getting the job done this weekend, but I think Nick Saban would like to go out and win 28-0, run the football 78 times, pass very little, rotate three or four different quarterbacks there just to hand the ball off, just to confuse. I think that's what he wants to do. And for Middle to disrupt that would be in this game to the fourth quarter, make Alabama do things that they don't want to do. That's how you win ball games and go down. I know people listen like, oh, whatever, Al. And that's fine. You could think that way, but upsets happen all the time. And even more with the transfer portal, you got guys now, you know, Middle might have 30 transfers on the team who've played in big game environments before. So it's like you're taking guys down who've never played in front of 90,000 people before. So it's a big, the transfer portal's really opened that up for a lot of people. Include myself.
Yeah, for sure. 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Just got a tweet. Coach Walt Wells, your buddy.
Yeah.
Eastern Kentucky University says, back where you belong, brother. Happy and proud for you.
Yeah, I talked to him this morning. They go on and take Cincinnati tomorrow and play Kentucky. We'll have him on the show next week.
We will. And look, Walt, I mean, you know, what he went through last year with his heart attack, and, Lord, and now he's back on the sidelines and
I'll never forget
ready to go.
Sunday morning, Coach Will Kreisky at Riverdale called me and said, have you heard the news? I was like, no, what? He's like, well, Walt had a heart attack, and it's pretty bad. I was like, ah, what? And I started thinking, oh, my God, because his father passed away from a heart attack, and then it was like, oh, my goodness. So it's funny, back, he comes back his first game.
He was back 2 weeks later, right?
He was. And their first game that he was back was at 7 overtime win over Bowling. Can you imagine that? Over 7 overtimes, you beat Bowling Green State at Bowling Green, which was a fantastic game. I'm just screaming at the TV. I felt I had a heart attack watching the game. And they win that game and going to get to the playoffs next
year. I thought you went the next week. You went to a game. Yeah.
I went to the next week. That's right. Good memory, stalker.
Yep, sorry. I meant to you know, again, I have to get used to it. We just start talking, and you never know where it's going to go. But I saw this. Sean Ford, our GM, sent this to me, which was really, really cool. A paper or a article out of the Athens Banner-Herald, which is, you know, Athens, Georgia.
Okay.
And so it was – the headline reads, what caused Georgia football players to go nuts before practice on Tuesday? So I'm like, okay, good headline. I'll bite. And start reading, and it says Georgia football players heard an announcement in their team meeting before Tuesday's practice. It had nothing to do with the game plan for Saturday's opener against UT Martin or the pregame itinerary. It was that Kyrus Jackson had made the Titans' 53-man roster.
Oh, wow.
And the whole team went – Kirby Smart is quoted in saying the whole team went nuts. He got a text from Jackson with the news. Kyrus was just ecstatic. Who better deserves that than a guy that went through 2, 3, 4 injuries? He was on the leadership SEC committee and represented the university on every board he can be on. He stood before the team and led, just an unbelievable leader. That was really cool. I love hearing stories
like that,
because Kyrus Jackson, I mean, I remember him at Georgia. I mean, he's a stud, and he did battle injuries, and the fact that, you know, he came to Titans camp. He did enough to make the initial 53. Got to stay there.
True.
But you know, he could be a return guy. You know, he could be one of those, you know, I always ask, like, you talk about some of the great undrafted guys of all time that, mm-hmm. you know, end up having awesome careers. I always think of Priest Holmes as one of them.
Why, a good topic.
Why can't Kyrus Jackson be one of those guys?
Yeah, and go as well. And speaking of Walt, you know, one of the players, Hillsborough High School, Matt Jackson, made the Titans team. And then Walt's telling me, yeah, he goes, I get a FaceTime call from him on Tuesday. And Walt's like, he's not FaceTiming me to say that he got cut. He's FaceTiming me and made the team. So, I mean, Walt was ecstatic, over the moon for this kid to get this opportunity to play in the NFL. I mean, it's good for the program, makes Eastern look good, but he was so genuine, heartfelt, happy for one of his players making a roster in the National Football League, same way as Kirby was with Kyrus Jackson. So it's a big deal. I mean, it's your dream. I mean, you come in and tell you that you've made the team. Vrabel walks and Vrabel coach want to see you. You're thinking, oh, well, I did all I could. Vrabel's like, welcome, made the team. Yeah. Good job. Goodness.
Oh, what a moment. I mean, we've seen what those moments look like on Hard Knocks and things like that, but they're awesome. We've also seen Jeff Fisher, you know, cut a guy for bringing his girlfriend in. Remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, you go. You know the rules.
We have rules.
Yeah, well, yeah. Sorry about that.
But it's a really cool story for sure. Kyrus Jackson making the Titans 53-man roster. Yeah, and I mean, like with Walt, you know, with teams like that, I think it's so cool that the player, the first call they make, or maybe not, you know, maybe they call their mom or whatever, but then one of the first calls they make is their college coach to say, hey, coach, I made it.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool.
That's absolutely.
It shows you the impact that those guys have. And, you know, we talk about transfer portals and coaches carousels and things like that. The relationships do still exist.
I forgot that Arian Foster was undrafted.
He was. Yeah, and Tennessee. He had a nice career.
He did.
Nice career with Houston.
John Randall for Hall of Famer for the Vikings. He was undrafted.
Yep.
Tony Romo.
Yep.
Another one. Warren Moon.
Yeah.
Undrafted.
Warren Moon might be the best undrafted of all time.
There's a lot of good ones.
Randall's pretty good.
Jeff Saturday was on this list.
Yeah,
that's a
good one.
Great head coach in the NFL.
What's he doing now?
Poor guy, man. I don't know. Back to – and, of course, Kurt Warner.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay, Kurt Warner or Warren Moon?
Got to go Kurt Warner. One Super Bowl, two appearances. But I'm a big Warner.
Three appearances.
I'll tell you, as a fantasy football fan in the late 80s and 90s, Warren Moon was fantastic. And that run and shoot for the Oilers.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It was good.
It was so good. That's a good one. I don't know. Warren Moon, man, can he go 50-50 on that? Warren Moon and Warner? I mean, I don't want to choose between those two.
I mean, if you're going based on – I mean, I get three Super Bowl appearances and you get one ring. That the ring
helps. Let me ask you this. Who do you think the best quarterback is all time?
Tom Brady.
Take away wins and losses. The best quarterback all time.
I mean, define best. Like – are
just
you,
best with mechanics, best everything. And you got to have longevity, too. I mean, it's hard to put Marino down.
Not have him on the list or hard
I mean, not have him in number one. It's just really difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as mechanics and athletic ability, throwing the football, I mean, Marino, if you go back and watch those games with him and Duper and Clayton, were just some of those passes
really
were unbelievable.
Question.
I mean, Elway was great.
Like, Elway, yeah, I mean, Brady, because of the rings and the stats. And,
oh, he's
I mean,
there.
Look, Brady, I think, should get credit because he was a six-round draft pick that wasn't even really that great in college and became the best of all time.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
You know, so, I mean, that kind of makes him, to me, that's what puts him in that category.
It does. So I don't know. I just watching those old, you know, I guess because I grew up with Marino watching all that stuff, but he was just amazing as a quarterback.
Absolutely. 737-1025. Real quick, texter Bobby says they should do a reboot of the Three Stooges, John Robinson, Jeff Fisher, and Jared Stillman. Except he says Gerard Stillman.
Why is Fisher on that list?
I don't know.
I don't know since you
everybody know. Hates on Jeff. I like he was.
He deserves a statue outside Nissan Stadium.
Right? They
sorry, he does.
He does. Like he did. He and Floyd both. I mean, they they built those teams.
For Titans-wise, from 99 to 2010, I mean, they're some of the best teams in football. Yeah, they went to Super Bowl, but still, you honor them over there for that. I mean, it was just – that was – and it was time to leave after the 2010
sure.
season.
Sure.
Adios. Yippee-ki-yay.
I do believe our guest may be here. So, Rondé Barber going to join us.
Rondé Barber.
Going to join us.
Hey,
Hall
when
of
he
Famer.
Comes in here, let's do just fake accents.
I right? think they're listening to us. They might know.
I'm like, Rondé Barber. What are you doing here today in Nashville? Rondé Barber. And you do that old, like, hey, Rondé Barber here in the studio today. That 1930s voice. You do that, and I'll do an Italian chef. Rondé Barber.
Chef Joe.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's all next. 102.5, 106.3 the game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin with you here on this Friday. Very excited about our next guest, Hall of Famer Rondé Barber in studio with us. He is in town this weekend. We'll tell you why here in just a few minutes. But Rondé, good to have you. Appreciate you stopping by in studio. Hit that button right there, Jojo. There we go. Welcome. Welcome to Nashville.
Yeah, glad to be in Nashville. Sorry that my my navigator.
The GPS will get you sometimes.
I'm gonna blame it on a user error in this case. If I would have known I was only 5 minutes from the airport, I could have just walked.
But here's the good news. You're not the only one this has happened to.
Oh, okay.
It's happened to a lot of people.
Unfortunately, and when they said that, I'm like, oh, no, the GPS got him.
Oh, so it's your fault. You should have just said we're five minutes from the airport.
But we appreciate you being here and hanging out with us. I know you're in town with Superbook Sports, the Tennessee-Virginia game tomorrow at 11 at Nissan Stadium. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, at the Landshark Bar and Grill at Margaritaville on Broadway, nice. You're going to be hanging out there.
Yeah, I'll be there with Ron, Tennessee legend. I'm a UVA legend, I think, still. It's been a long time since I was at Virginia, back when the program was very, very good. But I haven't been to a UVA game in a long time, so I'm excited to be here. The event at Margaritaville will probably be I'll be drinking a lot.
you might need to.
wondering what happened. Not that, you know, this time of year, hope runs eternal for every program, right? You just never know. The off season is what it is. This is your first real game. And I remember my third year at Virginia, we opened up the football season at Michigan. So 105,000 people. Our stadium was 43,000 at that time in Charlottesville. But we went on the road week one in Michigan and almost beat them. So just saying, anything can happen.
You never know. Any given Saturday, any given Sunday. Right. I mean, you went through those games in your career in the NFL, so you're right. You never know.
Never know.
Never know what might happen.
I always love asking this about guys who won Super Bowls. Where's your ring?
Funny you should say that.
Oh, no.
I have no idea.
Oh, no.
And not my fault. We took it out for an event probably a year ago. And right when I got announced into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, me and my wife were like, oh, we should probably find the Super Bowl ring. Might need it that week. And she's like, do you know where it is? I'm like, do you know where it is?
Oh,
I was like,
goodness.
Put it back in the closet. It's somewhere in my closet. And we have a kind of a big kind of convoluted junky closet where clothes, and I don't know where she put it. She doesn't know where she put it.
Well, so. There is a guy here lives in Nashville. He was the punter for the Steelers in the 70s who was showing his ring to a girl at a bar, and she tried to take it.
Oh.
And that's always asked about that because he finally got it back from her. But I'm always curious because most guys have it on the mantle or they don't know where it is or whatever. But at least you know yours is in your house.
Currently don't know exactly where it is, but I know that it's still in our possession, if that's a fair assessment of
well,
it.
I mean, that's good.
Yes.
Right, it is. Let me ask you, how much do you remember about playing a lot of, in the NFL, certain moments of games? Because I asked you this. There's an iconic moment with Steve McNair playing you guys on Monday Night Football when he took like a quarterback scramble, went 80 yards on a Sunday night. I'm sorry, it was a Sunday Night Football game. Do you remember that?
I don't want to remember that.
I can see the look on his face. I think that says it all.
Yeah, I remember playing against McNair. Yeah, the one of the most intimidating quarterbacks I ever stood next to or saw play. He was amazing football player. That he's gone, it's easy to talk about it, remember it, but he was not fun to play against. They had big running back, if you remember.
Yeah.
just as big
That's
as
That's right.
They were a tough team. That was early on in their careers, too. Not fun.
Just to see this guy at 6'3", 230, yeah, coming right at you with faster than you are, probably.
Well, now guys are built that way. I mean, he was an anomaly, I think, back in that day. That big, could run that fast. He played it. He played Alcorn State. Alcorn State, right? And he was that kind of athlete there. But we had never seen quarterbacks that looked like that, that could move like that. Now they're pretty commonplace,
right?
But he was different. He was way ahead of his time for sure, man.
We've referenced the kind of his process a lot, because with the Titans drafting Will Levis, mm-hmm, and Malik Willis in the last 2 years, of okay, what's the proper way to go about that? And
right.
And I had the opportunity to work with longtime GM Floyd Reese for, mm-hmm, for several years, and he was always of the belief of, you sit a guy and you let him cook and you let him develop. Steve did that, barely played for his first 2 years, and then they finally gave him the keys to the car. Nowadays, with first round draft picks making the money that they make, they have to throw them in there. But from your point of view as a corner, as a DB,
yeah,
do you still think that there's room for a guy to sit and just learn?
I wish more would. You think about Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets is probably a great thing for Zach Wilson, because he showed in his first year that he couldn't handle it, right? And then tried to do it last year, couldn't handle it. They put in Mike White at towards the end of that year. And you don't want him to give up on a guy that you put all that time in to evaluate and draft. Trey Lance is an even better example, really, right?
Because
he's only had about two or three games under his belt before he got hurt. And then he's replaced and then dealt to Dallas. So I think the Jordan Love path is the right path. And you understand why teams – do put him in early, because you have that small window. But not every quarterback comes in and is Josh Allen. And in fact, Josh Allen, his first year in Buffalo,
he struggled.
Was not very good. I did not think he was and I know that Kristen right here, my friend, is a big Josh Allen fan, but he was – I had my questions about him. And then he turned a year – in a year, he turned into one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So it there's different runways for each player. But I'm kind of on your path, man. I think they should wait. It's hard, though, because of the economies of the game now. In all honesty, in order to have a successful team without having a quarterback that costs $40 million and have other players on your team that, the good players on your team take up most of your cap, the quarterback's got to be young. Because as soon as you pay your quarterback, the dynamic changes.
Well, it happened here with Chris Chandler and McNair in 96 and 97. Chris Chandler didn't like McNair because he's taking his job, didn't help him out, didn't mentor him, mm-hmm, and then ended up – it caused a big division on that football team, because if it gets out of hand, it gets out of hand big time.
Right. Well, you don't blame Chris Chandler at all, do you? He's looking for looking for career longevity. I mean, because when this goes away, it goes away. It's over with. But there's that in every franchise, and not only from the players but from the front office. I mean, there's – from my experience not everybody's going to be on the same page. But if you have draft capital and a quarterback, it behooves you at some point to get them onto the football field. So that's why some of the decisions about quarterbacks nowadays seem so curious. You draft a guy in the first round, you think he should play. When they don't, or then they end up somewhere else, you're kind of wondering what the evaluation was, because obviously whoever drafted him thought he was good enough to play.
Correct.
But then the coach and then the staff and whatever else makes a different decision, and then you're – yeah, it just doesn't seem congruent.
All right, so I got to ask you. Chase and I were talking about this in the 9 o'clock hour. The Super Bowl, mm-hmm, all right, against the Raiders. Were you guys really calling out their plays? is this an urban legend? Because I want this to
one
be true
play.
So bad.
We called out one play.
Oh, is that it?
The West Coast system has a play, Sluggo Seam, right? It's what everybody runs. You run a kind of a hitch and go on the outside, and the quarterback's really just trying to get the free safety. In this case, it was Dexter Jackson for us, trying to get the free safety to move toward where he pumped the ball over down the sideline. But if you understand what the concept, the seam guy, the tight end or the receiver, who's ever on the other side of the ball is really where the quarterback wants to go. And it's mostly situational. You kind of know when it's coming.
Yeah.
And it's formation. It's just being prepared. And we were very prepared for that game because they're, to be honest with you, the way they ran their offense was designed perfectly for the way we ran our defense. And so we knew it was coming. Yeah. It's not quite Urban Legend, but there was – but there was one play.
Oh, I love
we
it.
Absolutely knew what they were doing.
We're gonna
it could have been
it.
Some other ones because we had five interceptions. I mean, we kind of, right. kind of figured them out pretty quickly. Great.
Do you like where do you personally put that defense when you're talking? And obviously, different eras, different rules. You know, it's hard to answer a question like that. But when you think about, I mean, how many Hall of Famers are on that defense, including yourself?
Four.
I mean,
like, four of them now.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching that game and watching that season and just how fun it was to watch. But where do you rank that defense, right, like when you're thinking of all-time greats?
Right. It would have been really easy to bet on us back then because we were so consistent, man. We were if you're asking me, we're top one, two, or three. And you can throw the Steelers out there. There were the Bears defense of that one year. But none of them, even the Ravens with their Super Bowl year, none of them had the longevity that we had.
Right.
We were that same defense, and mostly because we had the same players for like 10 years. We were top 10 defense. You can fact check me. I may be a couple years off. But we were top 10 defense for at least a decade or better parts of a decade. And with the same players, you know, Brooks, Lynch, Zapp, myself, Dexter Jackson, who I just mentioned. We had some other key elements there, Brian Kelly, that stayed together for a long time. And so it made it easy for us to be who we were. And we were simple. We played fast. We were very physical unit because we chose to be. It's like Monty Kiffin, our defensive coordinator. That was the only option we had. You had to be a physical. You had to be fast. You had to be smart to play in it. And we played in it for a long time. So if you ask me, there's not many that can claim to have the level of greatness for as long as we did.
Your DB coach, too.
Yeah, we had a pretty good DB coach.
Mike Tomlin. Good Lord.
He's turned into a pretty decent coach.
When was the first time you heard the standard is the standard? Did he ever say that?
Yeah, that was very yeah. Standard is a standard. It's true. I mean, and if you buy into it, it's true. I mean, Mike Tomlin, my Mike Tomlin story is I was a free agent in 01 after my rookie contract ran out. Mike T came in as the DB coach while I was a free agent. And Mike Tomlin basically convinced me to stay in Tampa. He's like, what you're doing at nickel, nobody else is doing that. I can't wait to coach you, da, da, da. Well, as it turns out, nobody wanted me. So I ended up having to go back to Tampa. And that next year, I led the league in interceptions. I had 10 interceptions. I'd only had two in any other year.
Nice.
And then I had 10. And then the following year after me, my compatriot, Brian Kelly, the other corner on the other side, had 8 and led the league in interceptions. So he had two corners in back-to-back years that led the NFL in interceptions.
Wow.
And then, obviously, we won a Super Bowl that second year. And then 2 years later, he's the defensive coordinator of Minnesota. And a year after that, starts his 17-year tenure in Pittsburgh.
So amazing.
He's an amazing coach, man. He's an amazing man, but amazing coach as well.
He's Rhonde Barber, the Hall of Famer, hanging out with us. You cool to hang through a break?
Mm-hmm.
Come back, talk a little bit more about this Hall of Fame experience.
As long as I don't have to go to Murfreesboro to get back to through the break.
Yeah, no.
My navigator.
We got you here now. Right by
Did
the
you
airport.
Really go to Murfreesboro?
We went a long
Close.
Way away.
He is Rhonde Barber, the Hall of Famer, hanging out with us. Chase, Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin with you here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Hall of Famer Rhonde Barber in studio with us. You can catch him tomorrow at Margaritaville, the Landshark Bar and Grill, on the second floor with Superbook Sports. He'll be there after the Tennessee-Virginia game, so go by and say hi. He's been nice enough to hang out with us. Now, I told you that, you know, we work with a couple of wide receivers, and, you know, they're a little chirpy, a little chatty sometimes. Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, texted me and wanted me to tell you he beat you on a 9 route one time. I guess it was one of the games here.
I if that happened, it definitely wasn't my fault. Safety should have been there. Monty called the wrong defense. I used to joke that I've never been beaten in my life. And to be honest with you, I think I just purposely forget that I did.
So – Derek Mason has told me he's never dropped a pass in his life.
Exactly.
Either. You know, it's like the same
bad thing. Ball. Bad ball. Quarterback threw a bad ball.
So you had to go up against him time or two.
Absolutely. A couple, at least three times I went against D-Mate. He's a good player back then.
Yeah.
He could and he played the game kind of like I played the game. He's kind of scrappy. Obviously, he was a very talented dude. But finding ways to get things done when probably, you know, football purists say he's not the right size. And I love playing against him.
Yeah, Hall of Famer. Has that set in yet? That is now forever connected to your name?
Yes, it is. I had a party to prove it to. Yeah, I was a finalist for 6 years, semifinalist for 6 years in a row. I was a finalist for the last 3 years. So it felt inevitable. Not going to lie. And I was only eligible for 6 years. So all of those years, it felt like the momentum was moving for me. But this past year, or even I should say the year before, because I thought I was going to get in last year, my presenter, Ira Kaufman, down in Tampa, it's like, nobody has anything cross to say about you in the meetings. Like, it's going to happen. It's just, when is it going to happen? When does the queue get short enough where you become top of the priority? And it was this year. So I would say that it sunk in because I've been ready for it for a long time. And knowing that I have, you know, three other guys from my defense, including my coach, so four other people that I played with in the Hall of Fame, it feels like a deserved destination for me for considering what I did in my career. So, yes, it's sunk in.
Now,
but I'm still partying, Chase.
Well, as you should. Now, whenever you talk to your brother Tiki or call him, do you make sure to inform him that you're a Hall of Famer and he's not?
I don't have to do that anymore. yes, I let him know. But, you know, Tiki's got a resume that should be Hall of Fame considered. So, you know, maybe one day he'll be in that.
Could you be a coach?
No. I've been asked to be a coach many, many times. And besides the inordinate time commitment that it takes to be a coach, I don't think I have the patience to be a coach. I was a perfectionist when I played, because I had to be. Talented, yes, but like overly talented. I wasn't right. Overly big. I definitely got slower as I got along my career. But by being a perfectionist and taking time to perfect my craft, I was able to play for 16 years and not miss a game and not be replaced, which is the reason why I didn't miss a game. Because I always felt like if I let somebody else do my job,
sure,
a good chance they might end up doing my job. So it was part of what motivated me. And I don't see guys like that anymore. It's a different landscape.
They asked Mike Singletary about doing that, and he said, I being head coach was fun. He goes, but I expect the same level of commitment that I had, and I'm not getting that. And that frustrated him. And you could see, I mean, throughout history, Hall of Famers who become head coaches, Mike Munchak was here. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Mm-hmm. You're on a different level as far as commitment and everything else, and you're not getting that. It would drive you crazy.
It would drive me absolutely nuts. And I understand. The money in the game has changed the game. If you're not feeling perfect, you don't play. That's just the way it is in the NFL nowadays. And for me, if you don't play, you're getting replaced.
Right.
And ultimately, the tolerate you till I can replace you mentality still persists in the NFL. It's just harder to get rid of guys because they make so much money nowadays. But guaranteed contracts, you know, somewhat make that more difficult. But, look, the game is it's supposed to be different because it's the biggest game in the world. Maybe outside of soccer, but definitely in the United States, because it's so consumable. It is the most consumable product on the planet.
Yes, it is.
In this country, and I love it. But the guys are definitely different. I mean, I felt like that back. You know, the guys that came before me, they were different. Now those guys that are playing now, they look at us like,
right,
oh, those guys were different. It's just the game. The game's not the same. And I'm not saying good, bad, or indifferent. It's just not the same.
Who was the moment where you got in the NFL, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. I'm lined up against Michael Irvin or somebody just like you saw on TV.
Yeah. My welcome to the NFL moment was my second year, and it was a guy who was having his first year, which was Randy Moss.
Yeah.
And Randy's first game of his professional career was against us at home, wow, Minnesota. and he had like 200 yards and two touchdowns. I wasn't playing in that game, but I'm sitting there watching what I knew was a really good player out of Marshall. Out of Marshall, you know, come to the NFL and just take it over. So I saw like the burgeoning Hall of Fame career that he had. We played him twice a year for 3 years. And having to deal with that, that was like, okay, if we can't stop this dude, then we're not winning any football games.
So. That's one of those guys that you look and go, that there's a good player and then they're special.
Yes, 100%. And he was on a team with Robert Smith as a running back. Chris Carter was the other receiver. Jake Reed, if you guys remember him, he was the third receiver, I guess second receiver. And they were impossible to deal with. Randall Cunningham was our quarterback that first year in 98. And you're just like, holy cow, man. Like, this is impossible to stop these guys.
It was.
But we did. We had some battles against them. But that team – and they were good for a lot of years, like 3 or 4 years. I think they went to the NFC Championship game, lost to the Giants once. And I don't think they ever made a Super Bowl.
But nope.
That was a team that you had to be able to play. So there was lots of those type of guys that I ran across. But he's the one that probably frightened me the most, to be honest with you.
All right, we got to ask you this. Chase and I talked this last hour. I think the best quarterback of all time, let's put the records out of the way, is Dan Marino. Just because the way he threw the ball, his athleticism, his accuracy.
Yeah.
I think it was. Chase says Tom Brady. There's no wrong answer here.
Yeah.
You faced all these guys.
Yeah.
Who do you consider the greatest quarterback in the NFL?
I'm biased, and I'll say it was – and I played against them all. And I played against Marino. We practiced against the Dolphins my first 2 years
in
Tampa. And I remember – Dan Marino, however old he was at that time, 38 years old, I don't even know. But he was old, and I was like, this old quarterback. And he's slinging balls by your head, and you're just like, how did he just like, can I play in this league? those were that moment. He was very good. I think it was Peyton Manning, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Peyton, the way that he played the game above the neck, I've never seen. Tom was very, very good. Obviously, I saw him last 3 years in Tampa. His control of the offense and himself, more importantly, there's a reason why he won 7 championships.
Right.
But the best I played against was Peyton. And I played against him 3 different times, once in Indy, and once in Indy when he was in Tampa. He came to Tampa and beat us on that Monday night game, which was brutal. And that's probably why I'm biased in this regard. I also went to school with his wife, but I'm biased because the way that he beat us, nobody else beat us that way. Because it was will, determination. Obviously, he knew what the heck he was doing. He knew what you were doing before you knew it. I'll further that story by the year he went to Denver. Shiana was our head coach, and we had this plan for not tipping off anything that we were going to do against Peyton because he just figures you out. So we were this base static defense, and he's calling out stuff that we're getting ready to stem into, kind of move into, before we even do it. And I'm like, how does he know this? how does he do this? And he was that good. But again, it's no wrong answer. I agree with you.
There's a good chance you might see him tomorrow at the game.
I'll see him tonight. I'll see him tonight.
Virginia is a 28-point dog.
Is that it?
Tennessee, according to the Superbook Sportsbook.
Right.
How do you go against that offense that Josh Heupel runs?
Right. That air raid offense with a whole gang of seniors on their roster.
I mean, a quarterback with a cannon for an arm.
I think they're only – what's his name? Squirrel?
Squirrel White?
Yeah, he's the only underclassman playing in this game. So let's start there. The Virginia's defense has a lot of return. They are also a veteran defense. They have some seniors that are back. They actually have some pretty good down linemen. I think 70% of their sack totals are back from this year. But let's be honest. Virginia was a 3-win team last year. They obviously went through a tremendous tragedy with the program, with those three guys were murdered on that bus, but they've rallied around themselves. And if you're a Virginia fan, that's what you're hoping this season turns into, the rallying, that one togetherness mantra that they've been pumping all off season and preseason, you know, shows itself on the football field. But the reality is Tennessee's a really good football team. And Virginia's got a transfer quarterback. They got a running back that I think is going to be pretty good, transferred from Clemson. They got a receiver that transferred from Northwestern. You know, could it be interesting? Yeah, but the avalanche of Tennessee is going to come down on them, I think. And that's coming from a guy who, you know, bleeds, you know, blue and orange.
Yeah, for sure. Well, have fun.
Yeah,
I know you will. Nashville, it's not hard to do.
No.
You can have fun here in Nashville. Superbook Sports, you're in town with them. And tomorrow, Margaritaville, the Landshark Bar and Grill, the lounge. After the game, people can come by and meet you, and going to be awesome. Thanks so much for doing this. This was great.
Yeah, I'm glad that you guys had me on, and I apologize for being late.
On behalf of my navigator,
I apologize.
It's all good.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
It's an honor. Hall of Famer Rhonde Barber in studio with us. We'll give you some picks coming up next with Lee Sterling here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, alongside Big Joe Dubin. Appreciate Rhonde Barber for joining us. What a cool interview that was. Every Friday, usually at 10:30, has been nice enough to push back a little bit. Lee Sterling is going to join us, Paramount Sports. Lee, thanks for pushing back. I hope you understand. Hall of Famer was in with us and was a really cool conversation. So thanks so much for understanding.
So you mean my high school Hall of Fame doesn't quite equate with that?
There's a little bit of a difference.
I understand. So but excited, glad to help you out.
Excited to have you back with us. Lee Sterling, Paramount Sports, going to give us some picks every week. So let's dive right into it with some games that you have. We'll start with the one here. Tennessee and Virginia, neutral site, Nissan Stadium, but it's basically a home game for Tennessee. Tennessee laying 28.
So Tennessee, I think, is good, and they're in a much better place than where they were a couple years ago when they were 7-6. I just think that Hendon Hooker, I mean, if he doesn't get hurt last year, he's a Heisman Trophy winner. Also, Jalin Hyatt, I thought he was the best receiver, college football. Joe Milton is fine, but he's not at that level here. So I'm looking at this team, Virginia, and the new clock rules, and you got to take everything into advantage here and study all these things. They are not going to stop the clock when there's a first down now, so except it's when within the last 2 minutes of the second and the fourth quarter. So we're going to see about 8 or 9 less plays per game. We're going to see scoring down probably close to 3 points per game. Virginia, what do? They just want to move the clock. They're going to take their time. They go into a huddle. They don't stand on the line of scrimmage here. They run the football. They're not pretty. Pretty decent defensive line. They're going to just try to limit the big plays here. I think 28 is too much here. First start here for Joe Milton of the new season. I think they win this game something like 41-17. I think Virginia is the right side here.
Okay, interesting. Kentucky taking on Ball State. Ball State getting 26.
So Kentucky, I think, is a team that's under the radar. This is a team, probably top 5 coaching staffs. I think they do a great job here. Liam Cohen returns as offensive coordinator after spending 1 year with the Rams. He'll come up with some new, different features to the offense. I love Devin Leary. I mean, he's the only guy they're replacing on the offense here. And Devin Leary just distributes the ball. He lets the guys, puts the ball in places where these guys can make plays. Ray Davis comes over from Vandy. Another nice addition here. And what's Ball State's situation? Well, they lost their best player maybe in the last decade, kid Carson Strong. He ends up going to UCLA. He's going to be UCLA's feature back here. They have a new quarterback. Defensive secondary isn't very good here. Sometimes you got to lay it if you want to play it. Kentucky big here, 48-7.
The game of the weekend, one that I'm really excited about, and it could be one of the games of the year, LSU, Florida State in Orlando. LSU is favored by 2.5.
If it's anything close to the game last year, we're going to have a lot of fun. Wasn't decided until an extra point was blocked right at the last second. So this is going to be a fun game. You got Jordan Travis for FSU, dual threat quarterback. Jaden Daniels, the same for LSU. But I just think that Jaden Daniels is a cut above. When he gets on a roll, he can hit 7, 8, 9 in a row. put the ball right on the money, also maybe a little bit better runner. How lucky did Florida State get last year? They got to face five backup quarterbacks. And Brian Kelly, that was his first game last year. I thought he made a couple tactical mistakes that might have cost his team 7 to 10 points during that game. And Florida State, they were the hunter last year. They were coming off a 5-7 year. No one was looking at them. Now they're being hunted here. I like the over best, Chase. Over 56 total points. I think we're going to see a high-scoring game. I also like LSU, 34-30.
Okay, I like that. Real quick, Alabama hosting Middle Tennessee State. Middle Tennessee getting 39 points in this one, playing in Tuscaloosa.
So I know the kid Vitello that's going to start for Middle Tennessee State. So I go to a bunch of high school games once I finish shows on Friday night. Nice kid. He's just not ready for this. This is going to be his first start here. He would probably be fifth string in Alabama's quarterback depth. So Alabama here, romper room special here, 60-7.
All right, Lee, I got about 30 seconds. Yep. Your free play is UNC, South Carolina, North Carolina, -2.5.
They want to get it for free. Just call 800-400-9741. Give them the North Carolina, South Carolina game. Should be a great game for free. Check out the new website, 30 Years in Business, ParamountSports.com. You can get everything, footballs from a month to a season package, or even UFC this weekend, have our biggest selection of the year. It's all up and available, ParamountSports.com.
Cannot wait to continue these conversations with you each week at 10:30. Thanks so much for doing this, Lee.
You're welcome. See you, Chase.
See ya. Lee Sterling joins us every Friday at 10:30. Hey, that's going to do it for us when we're back on Tuesday.
That will do it.
Chase and Big Joe show officially debuts.
Proud to be back, brother. Thank you.
Thanks for being back. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, that's next.